Hello, everyone. Welcome back to part two of Private Parts, the podcast where nothing is off limits. Nothing.
I like you do your own special effects.
Yeah,
don't worry
about that. Wow.
And you do accents.
What the fuck don't you do?
Oh, cartwheels. Yeah.
Is that, well, you can't do a cartwheel?
Yeah, I fucking
can. He doesn't pay his taxes, actually. Oh. Yeah. Sorry to say it.
Boys, what I want to ask is, Carl, for you, okay, now that you guys are touring the whole time and stuff like that, do you look back at the moment when you were at, when you first started gigging, and do you go, that was potentially even more fun than it is now, or is now better? Because normally what happens is the simplistic times are the best times.
I was thinking that when you were talking about driving around in
your mum's
car or something. I was like, that sounds like quite an epic.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where I think in hindsight it was like, at the time it was fun, but we literally just listened to 2001 by Dr. Dre the entire time in our friend's mum's car.
Psyching yourself up.
And like, only me and Woody could drive as well. So like Kyle and Will quite happily just sat in the back, like sleeping, covered in all the gear,
keyboard, like keyboard and like a drum rack like that.
Shut up, you had it all in the back.
So basically it was kind of the boot, and then through the gap of the seats there between me and Will would be there, and then things across like that. So we'd have to like slot ourselves in like a Tetris, and then we'd just be like, this is where I am for the next 8 hours whilst we drive to fucking Wrexham or somewhere.
Wrexham, and it's just like,
yeah.
But a magical time though, right?
It was really fun. And I think as well,
And like kind of naive in retrospect as well.
That's the best moment, the naivety.
That's it. And because back then it was novelty. Like, we hadn't traveled this much and we hadn't been to any of these places. And so it's the first time we'd ever traveled. And so any stage at this point was like, that's too big. And there's 8 people here. That's too many people.
Yeah. Like seeing the first 3 people at the front of a gig in like Bath in a little club called Moles, seeing people singing along to songs that had only really existed on SoundCloud and live.
Yeah,
I remember that like so vividly. But also our manager was quite tight. So we would like that first tour,
I remember
our songs were getting played, like started to get played on the radio. And I remember, I think like one of our songs, we were told it was going to get played and we were really excited and listening around, but we were literally staying in our sound guy, Coop, lived in like a reclaimed building sort of squat thing, and we were all on basically just,
I love how you teed
old
that up. Like a building that was like reclaimed squatting.
Squat.
Yeah.
He lived in a squat.
It was an old school.
So we all slept in different classrooms on these like dirty mattresses on the floor, like between gigs.
Was this in London?
It was in Birmingham.
There was 100% blood on my mattress.
Was that before or after?
Because we joked about it. It was like half 50-50.
Yeah, yeah. Some of my blood, some of the other guys.
Did you say to him, by the way, I don't want to freak anyone out, there's blood all over my mattress.
I'm like, yeah.
I think you were too polite to mention.
Yeah, of course.
Until afterwards, yeah.
He just slept around it. Sleep around it. Yeah. Around like this pool of blood.
Sleep around it like a caterpillar. Trying to get position.
That was fucking weird. Being like, here's your song on Radio 1. And then you're like, we're on a...
So how did it all begin then? So Dan, you had a solo career that
I mean, career
off.
Is very generous.
That was
very
huge.
Generous. Yeah,
fast and loose of the words.
Yeah, I'd been writing these songs, what became the sort of first few Bastille songs and stuff, and I used to play like just me with a keyboard and a bunch of different instruments and a loop pedal, and what a loop pedal requires is really good timing, which I don't have.
I love how you said, remember back to part one, we jumped the queue, this one's starting off, had a loop pedal, it's really hard. You have to be so coordinated. But it is hard.
But I also used to hate being on stage so much that I'd have to drink like a bottle of wine before going off and playing, and like my timing is already bad enough as it is, and then having to sort of like be in time with yourself and like hit this pedal, it was a fucking nightmare.
Is it like a drum beat almost that you have to try and play, or is it way
harder? So it's like, there's 2 pedals and you hit one
and it loops,
you record a loop and then it loops that background, and you have to sort of time with yourself. But actually, because this was a while ago, like now they're way easier to use and they've got a click and all that kind of stuff and a metronome, but at the time it was just a little tiny LED light that flashed with the beat. So basically I was doing that by myself. And it was like
imagine it's like one man band just clanging.
It was full, like, yeah,
just looking nuts on stage.
Oh no, I'm like, and now he's pulled out a melodicum, where those bongos come from. Yeah, it was ridiculous. Weird that didn't work out, actually, isn't it?
That's insane that you had that. I mean, to probably make you blush, but that's talent. That is.
I mean,
maybe saying it started out quite massively.
Anyway, it started with that, and you know, it was a bit lonely. So like, I met Woody, our drummer, who lived like 2 roads down from me at the time, and he started playing. And so there was a while where it was like me doing the loop pedal thing and Woody drumming, but he was like having to stare at this little flashing light to try and stay in time with it, which was a fucking nightmare. Particularly, I remember playing a gig outside where the sun was so bright, so that you just couldn't see the light. So it was just him guessing, me guessing, him. They're like, why is that drummer staring so intensely at that guy's feet?
It's not very rock and roll.
It's a really interactive, like, band.
Yeah.
It's really interactive.
It's real avant-garde slash shit.
Hang on, hold on, sorry, 2 seconds.
Yeah. It then started to feel like, right, this should be a band. So, like, that's when, like, Kyle was really good mates with a friend of mine from uni. We actually went to the same uni, but didn't know each other.
What uni was that?
Leeds.
Oh, I was at Leeds.
Yeah, were you?
Yeah, I did theatre and performance. Yeah, yeah. Smashed it.
Look at, look at him now.
I did music technology.
Ah,
so,
dude,
hey, come on,
man. Yeah, come on, I'm with you, buddy. That's
and I had a radio show there back in the, and then I met our friend Kate through there. Then when I got back to London, she was like, look, I've got a friend you need to meet.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And so we would be at like some random house parties and Kate was like, oh, this is Dan. And Dad was kind of, we got chatting. Dan was like, oh, I heard you play some instruments and whatever. I was like, yeah, I've got this band sort of going. I was like, oh yeah, cool. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah,
like,
sure, buddy.
So yeah.
Sort
numbers.
Give you. Yeah.
You don't know how to use the loop pedal.
Walked off. I was like, Kate, yeah, your friend's cool, man. And then I think it was maybe the second or third house party incident where we ended up on the sofa together chatting about me joining the band.
It's like he's like courting you.
it was on the third date that he finally cracked me.
Finally asked him out. Yeah.
I was all his after that.
Yeah. And then the next morning I woke up and I was like, you know what, like, what's the worst that can happen? Cut to now.
Are you serious? That's what it was.
Yeah.
That moment, literally that moment that you were like, screw it, why not?
Yeah.
I'll just go and do it.
Yeah.
Because does it happen for you guys, obviously, like you said, it happened organically. You're suddenly going, all right, we're going to give this a shot. And then slowly by slowly, it becomes your job. When is the moment that you suddenly go, shit, we don't have it. This is career now.
Well, basically 2010, we got together. And then 2011, okay, the band
was
started.
That quick. It was that quick for you, because then you had the Brit Awards nomination 2013.
2013 our album came out.
Yeah, very beginning of 2013. Yeah,
that's a quick turnaround.
So it was basically those 3 years was kind of like us having jobs and doing the music. Mm. And then I think it was when we got signed, we were like, I don't have to build stages anymore. Because
I'm playing on them.
Carl used to build stages at like festivals, including Isle of Wight. And this one year, super early days, he built the stage. Then had to climb out, get out of his uniform and into his normal clothes. We did a gig, and at the end of this, at the end of the gig, he got back into
my gear.
You're lying.
I think just through working like as part of the team, I obviously knew all like the bookers and stuff, and I was like, look, like I'm part of a band, but like, we're actually pretty good. And I obviously sent them the MySpace link or some whatever.
Flashing page. It's like, yeah. Wow.
And they were like, actually, yeah, you're pretty good. Tell you what, like we'll chuck you first on. I was like, this is fucking so nuts. Good.
That's how it
guys, I got us a gig.
And I was like, yeah, guys, I got this gig at fucking Isle of Wight. And so then,
what year was that?
11 or 12,
yeah. Okay. And then, so built the stage. Then we played, and then I got back to work.
Did you have to take the stage down?
I did. But in between then, all these guys just stuck around. Was like, Kyle, give me more tokens and get us a chair. Look, like, we need more chairs. Get us a beanbag for the garden area. And I had to run around doing all this stuff. Oh, yeah.
Dude, do you look
at stages now, like you go and play and you're like, they've not put
shoddy.
That right.
Yeah, shoddy.
That is not good masonry.
That 8x4 steel deck's off. I know that. Someone grab me a podger.
Mid gig, it's just really pissing you off. You're like, fuck.
Dude, that is not, but I know we spoke with this before, but the fact I didn't, now it's such a quick turnaround to suddenly go from just traveling around making music, getting gigs when you can, to then suddenly being nominated for Brits and then suddenly being there and going like, holy shit, this is
dude, it was
popping.
Nuts. Also like a thing to vaguely acknowledge was there was no hype around us whatsoever. So like we always had this thing where like, why I think it felt to a lot of people like we came out of nowhere was because the prospect of us and our music sort of confused people. So like no one in the British media really gave a fuck. Which is completely fine, but meant that, like, you know, loads of artists that come through, there's like, there are polls and there are lists and like, these guys are going to be big this year. Like, we just didn't, we knew that like fans were coming and people were listening to the music and that was amazing, but like we never got the pre-hype or accolades or anything like that. So when it happened to us, it was genuinely a surprise for so many reasons. And suddenly then to a lot of people, they're like, where have they come from? Who are these freaks?
And they don't know that whole backstory grafted for. Which is a probably more traditional way that bands kind of come to the
fore. Exactly. I feel like we sort of did the kind of DIY grafting and also the sort of online world weird, like not in a calculated or intentional way, but those sort of both happened in parallel.
The naivety that comes back in, the mistakes actually make what happened, what makes it up.
Yeah.
But with you guys, I always find what like kicks off is your live lounge stuff.
Yeah.
Your live house stuff, man, is so the one song that was I swear to God went viral was your remix of Miley Cyrus.
Yeah,
that was really fun.
So basically, it's so good.
Before our album came out, in that period after you get signed and before your album comes out, which often if you're like can feel like an eternity because you know what feels like month. You know, I remember our first album got pushed back by like 4 months, and at the time we were devastated, and that felt like. And
forever.
That's such a long time, but actually in the grand scheme of things, it's nothing. So we did two mixtapes, and the whole idea of the mixtapes was taking like music from films and soundtracks and old like weird covers and songs from like the 80s and 90s and stuff and mashing them together with film quotes. So we did No Scrubs, and we used this guitar riff from Angels by the XX, and we arranged this big string section and then got quotes from Psycho because we sort of like, oh, Norman Bates lives at home with his mum. So like-
He's a scrub.
So we sort of like, there's this weird cinematic version of No Scrubs we did with Ella Eyre and loads of quotes from Psycho. Just, I don't know. It was kind of having fun with fucking around with music and pop and covers and all that kind of stuff. So we sort of had that already in the bag as something that we did. And then when it came to live lounges, we were like, right, what can we do to be really creative here? So we're like, how can we tell a story? And at the time, Miley Cyrus, it was sort of one of her more sort of like controversial periods.
The Eminem.
Eminem was going for her in the press and stuff. So we basically took an Eminem song and put this Miley Cyrus song to it and then go into Achy Breaky Heart by her dad and like incorporated like the like a Lion King riff because she was in the Disney Club. All of it felt like logic at the time. But
wait, dude, that is crazy.
It's like a DJ that got drunk at a wedding.
Yeah, exactly.
This is such a dumb point, but musically that is insanely kind of talented, right? To see how all of these can work from a guy who's not musical and at all, but from any to see how all those riffs will work together. That's insane that you guys can hear that and you go like, this is going to work. And especially, I know you practice well, but then you're doing a live lounge, which is...
I mean, it's fucking terrifying.
Which is so exposing, right?
We did... You
crushed it. All of you guys, it's insane.
I think back to that time and, you know, we were sort of trying to pull that all together, but we're also... That was the busiest time ever for us. So we were probably like, we probably had like a couple of hours to pull it together and we're kind of traveling all the time. And it was nuts, but like... It's always really fun with that. I think we always try to use opportunities like that to do something weird and creative and a bit like silly because basically pop music is innately simple and quite malleable. And that's why it's brilliant. And that's why it can be so, it's there for anyone that makes music in that form to like fuck around with and experiment with as much as possible. And so, like Carl said, it's really malleable because there is a simplicity to it, but it actually, you know, there's loads of YouTube videos of like, here's 1,000 songs over the same four chords. And that's true, but that's not to say those songs aren't amazing just because of the simplicity. But yeah, so we found it's kind of a rod for our own backs now, because every time we do a cover,
it's
like,
precedent now.
You then did the John Lewis advert as well, and then that was in a live lounge as well.
Yeah,
and that was freaking great.
That was really weird, the John Lewis thing.
Was it?
Well, just being as an obviously it's an institution, but we were on tour in America, yeah. And we just got a call saying, "Are you up for trying to sing this song?" And I'd never heard the original before. Which is mad.
Is it John?
It's really famous on the phone.
Yeah. But is that a good thing? I mean, it's a good thing to John Lewis, or is it not? How does that sit with you guys?
I think it was like just an interesting thing to be part of. This amazing musician called Mara Carlisle, she had like arranged the whole song and done this orchestral version. And at the time, we were doing loads of orchestral gigs, because it was like we went off and did this whole weird thing where we reorchestrated all of our songs. So it kind of fitted in with that. But at the same time, we were in America touring this album that was about, like, it was a concept album set over 20, like a 12-hour bender while an apocalypse is happening outside. So to then jump into doing an orchestral version of an old song from the 80s that I'd never heard before, sure, it was a leap. But
I love how you said it was interesting. It was interesting.
I don't know. It's one of those things where like my nephews are obsessed with the dragon that's in that advert. Yeah. And that's probably from their like 1 and 3 year old perspective, the only thing I've ever done that they will acknowledge or care about. And that's cool.
Yeah, that made kind of nice.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of mad. I think it felt really detached because we did it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In and amongst so much other stuff while we were on tour. I remember going to a studio. I mean, the irony was, I went to a studio in New York, and because we have our own place and because we like often record at home, we haven't done like all the big amazing studios of the world. Like they're all, I still feel like a competition winner when I walk in. Really? So I went to this like really cool studio in New York, which was up, like way up a skyscraper. And in the other room, there was another artist and like his whole crew. And let's just say that the air was quite thick with weed
Snoop.
Smoke.
Is it yeah. Snoop? Who is
so,
it?
So like, and Willy, then I, and Willy then Willy I walked in and was like, "Hello, I'm here to record for the John Lewis advert." And I was in with this engineer who was like an American guy, and it was kind of intimidatingly cool. So I'm singing this song that I don't know very well, and this engineer is there, and I had like an hour to do it, and I stopped and was like, "Mate, I'm really sorry. I just want to give you some context because this must seem mental to you. While this like really cool rapper next door is doing whatever, like, I just need to explain just so you know." I was like, "So in the UK, there's a shop, and every year,
when you break it down, it sounds nuts.
Mental." I was like, "People get really excited by the advert that they do at Christmas time," and he was like, "Okay." I was like, "And so we generally take a song from the..." Anyway, I'm
trying to
explain it while stoned off the acid.
He leans back. Basically. He leans back, "Guys, can we lay off the weed for a bit?"
Yeah, yeah.
Because
This is just not... you start to get really philosophical. "I don't know about this whole thing."
Yeah. I guess, yeah. I mean, it was weird. I think like that kind of happened far enough into us having done stuff that I think we felt comfortable that it wouldn't like define anything.
That's what I mean. I mean, so I suppose my question is, and I can see... forgive me, but the hesitation in it, because something that is quite a mainstream thing to do, where you guys are mainstream but you're also not, so it's almost challenging.
I feel like in our sort of last 10 years we have these moments that like tip over into mainstream,
which is totally fair, right? And that's a good thing.
It was fun, and like when Pompeii was massive, like No one fucking thought a song about a volcano and volcano victims with weird chanting. Like, I think the reason it was big was because it didn't sound like anything else. And that cut through. But like, we weren't making it to be big. Like, if we wanted to be big, like you said, we would have probably done whatever everyone else was doing at the time. And so that was kind of weird and surreal. And that album sort of peaked. And then, you know, we had, there'd been other moments along the way, other songs we've done. And it is surreal to see them be so big, because it's, we're not the kind of band where it's expected that everything we do is going to go there. So we sort of like have those moments, get a bit freaked out by them. And then it's sort of like a challenge to ourselves to, in and amongst all that, be as, indulge all the things that we want to do, like be really odd, make a weird concept album, then do like a choose your own adventure experiential 3D audio play to go with it. Like, just be like, lean into like the fun, pretentious, collaborative stuff.
Staying
that we can
true
do.
To what you like love
then,
doing, I guess.
But then how do you, what is the secret then to staying together? To being creatively in sync? And I'm sure there's been moments that you guys have had where you've fallen out and things like that.
Yeah, totally. I think that it's because we've kind of all got different kind of musical backgrounds, and like kind of the things that we like and the things that we grew up listening to via like friends and family and whatever are all very different. And it's sort of, it isn't about us kind of really being in sync. It's about us putting in, because Dan's always had the kind of view of how it wants to be, and
the vision, like, almost of this
yeah, for sure, like, and kind of anchors it in, you know, because he writes the songs, he is the he's the anchor of the stuff, and then we add things that can be complementary to that, and sometimes if they're not, it's like, right,
that,
like,
doesn't fit
the vibe isn't fitting, but the, just getting the right bits from each sort of person at the right sort of right time,
that's
and
hard
stuff.
Though it's like becoming a transformer, right, that you have to connect together, like going back to that Tetris thing, you have to do that, which I think would cause friction a lot of the time, especially as you become more popular. You know, everyone starts goes, oh shit, it's this. And you, my experience is, and it's wrong, is that greed becomes a thing as much as we do, it does, right? Like fame, success, money, whatever it is. And especially in bands when you have to stay a team. So staying a team is hard. And what is the secret? I mean, what
under
is the
that pressure to, like, yeah, you've just had a big success, and then like there's going to be pressure, isn't
and
there?
And there's booze, there's parties, there's this, there's that, there's distractions everywhere.
Yeah.
I got told once that if you have a destination, you follow your destination, you don't veer off. If you veer off any other way, you get lost, right? And it seems with you guys, you just had that destination, you've gone, this is who we are, this is what we're going to do, we're going to stay true, and we're going to stay a team together. And I just...
The highest analogy count, I think, we've done on any podcast. I think that was number 7, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it is.
I once got told by an old prophet, just before he slipped off, just before he died.
I suppose what I'm saying is I admire it, and I don't understand, and I find it hard to... Because I would definitely lose my way, 100%, especially my early 20s.
But I think the thing with us is, like, because we're relatively private and stuff, like, we've all had moments along the way, and, you know, it's not been easy being away loads, and the sort of headfuckery of so many elements of it, like, have... been a lot, and I think the amount that we took on and then never having a stop and never breaking, I think in some ways we probably got through it because we never stopped. It's like that thing, you know, at the end of a tour there's like a cliche that everyone gets ill because your immune system and everything's been, and adrenaline's been like firing so much that as soon as you stop, everyone gets sick because your body like stops for a minute. And
that first week or two after coming off a tour is just nuts,
really.
Your body doesn't know what to do, and also because on tour you're getting told what to do all the time, every single day. So I wake up, I'll be sat on the sofa like, I'm starving, I need a shit. Like, I don't know.
Which one is it?
I don't know what to do. Because it's like
eat a burger on the
schedule. The schedule's all there. It's worked out good for other musicians.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You're so
actually, don't do that.
Come on.
True, it has.
But I know what you're saying. You kind of get told what to do. Do you guys meditate? Do you guys, how do you guys keep yourself level, because what you can't come off stage and come off tour and then what go and watch like reruns of Jeremy Kyle, like, I mean, what you
want, I think that I don't know, we
I'm more of a Loose Women man.
Yeah, Jeremy Kyle, that was a rogue reference.
No, hey man,
I followed your time and an era. I guess our way, I don't know, like, we have always had quite a good time on tour, and I guess you finish a gig at like 11-12 o'clock and then the natural thing to do is to like drink or go out or whatever. And I think that's sort of characterized a lot of it, hopefully not in like a problematic way, but that's characterized a lot of it for us. And I think that's not the most healthy of coping mechanisms. Some people can get off stage and like go read a book and go to bed. And I think we've always kind of struggled with that. It'll be interesting going back now after like a 2 year break to see what the vibe is, because I don't think
it's drinking green teas and doing a bit of yoga. Yeah.
No, definitely. No, you're going to get smashed.
Yeah, we'll see.
But I think I've been huge fans of you guys. Always, like, honestly, since 2011, I've had breakups to your songs. I've had makeups.
Oh God, I'm so sorry.
No, I literally have. I broke up with an ex girlfriend. I had to run round Parsons Green listening to you.
I'm glad we helped get you.
Yeah, dude, you really fucking did, man. But it's also, I suppose, when you meet people that you meet the people behind the music, you always kind of hope they're going to be what they are, and just you,
massive assholes.
You're massive, complete dickheads. But it's true. And we take out so much of your time here, but you guys are incredible. I wish you all the success.
Oh, thank you.
Touring as well? Because you guys are back, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, do you know what? It's really important as we're in the lead up to. We've got albums and tours and stuff that we should probably. I should know about.
Yeah, yeah. Let's plug everything.
That's a big. Ali, nod. What is it? Ali at the label.
Ali, come on, tell us. When is it?
4th of February, new album, Give Me the Future.
Oh, okay, what's it called?
It's called Give Me the Future.
Sick.
And it's like a kind of weird sci-fi, but also hopefully good songs.
Yeah, it's weird sci-fi.
It's like...
Obviously you're proud of it, right?
So proud of it. Like, it's our fourth album, and we kind of started it before the lockdown, and it's all about like escapism. So I thought it'd be interesting to look at like the different ways that we distract ourselves from our own minds. And it became a sort of weird sci-fi during the lockdowns. So we were like, fuck it, if it's going to be a sci-fi, let's fully go there. So I don't know, it's kind of really fun, and I think it's like our most weird and adventurous album sonically, but it's also just was really collaborative, and we're not normally that collaborative. So we sort of worked with writers that I've met along the way when writing for other people, and other producers and you know, friends that we've met along the way, and brought in loads of the elements of like, we orchestrated, so there's sort of, yeah, just loads of other musicians, and there's lots of it's I think musically for me like really exciting. We all had quite a good time making.
You're
it,
not also, afraid to push those boundaries, are you? You that's exciting.
I think this one is potentially of our albums like the out there the most, but it's all kind of, but equally they're all like, it's like half an hour long. It's the whole thing, and it's kind of nuts what we managed to pack into.
So you can listen to it twice.
Yeah. I can't wait. Listen, I fall asleep.
But we also wanted to write about. I say sci-fi, and it's more like it's about humanity in the context of all the technology that we use all the time. Because like basically, real life feels like a bizarre dystopian film,
doesn't it? It's
like
mad.
So much. I know that's a cliche, but just, you know, obviously the amount that we are on our screens and on our phones, and like the way that technology is just stitched into every single corner of life, from like to what you listen to and what you watch and what you read and who you meet and how you see yourself and all those things, like it's just kind of fascinating. So we wanted to write something that explored all those ideas and how we're constantly confronted by what the future might look like and all of that stuff, but also make a really fun pop album that was like real escapism. So
just a bit of classic Bastille there.
Yeah. That Trojan horse of like, we tricked you into with some nice sounds, but actually we're talking about super depressing shit.
Just classic Bastille.
Yeah. But then like ending, like there's a couple of points in the album where like things get a bit ridiculous in terms of like anxieties about the state of the world. And then we always try and like pop that bubble and undermine it. And so there's a couple of moments where it's like, oi, stop being a fucking worry. Whatever.
There's
like,
some hope in there, but you got to really,
you got to
really,
you got to
play the album
like
backwards.
Yeah.
But like life, right? That's is representative of life, right? That's what we do. We have these anxieties, and actually, you go, come on, stop worrying.
Yeah,
actually,
totally. So there's a song in the middle of the album that's like basically the person that you're in bed with, like pulling you out of your own head and being like, "Oi, stop it!" Like,
love that.
Be here. Be. I really shy away from this kind of language, but like basically be present and enjoy what you have. And the last song on the album, having spent half an hour worrying about the future, the last song on the album, someone being like, "Oi, stop it. You could be dead tomorrow. Like, just try and enjoy what you got." So, like, try to end on a sort of positive, helpful note.
Semi-positive.
But it's always, it's always tinged with death and depression because it's us.
You gotta do that. And boys, where can we get tickets for the tour? When does that?
Oh, yeah.
We'll leave the link in the description below as well for sure.
Yeah. So we're doing a little tour in a couple of weeks for when the album comes out. We're going to sort of small venues around the country, which I'm really excited about. I think that's sold out. But then we're doing a kind of arena tour in like April, is it?
Oh my God.
Yep.
We don't
have the exact dates.
We're really organized.
I'm gonna be fucked up.
But on the website,
come along.
Mate, 100%.
So yeah, we're playing the O2 and a bunch of places around the country. And that should be really fun because it's been a while since we've done a big tour, and we get to put on like a proper show. Particularly if the album's like a sci-fi.
Are you gonna get dressed up in like sci-fi?
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh, we got it.
We're in.
We'll be in luminous body suits. Just you wait.
I can't wait.
Sure, no one will want to see it, but you can avert your eyes. It's fine.
Boys, listen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. What we like to tradition at the end is leave our listeners with something inspirational.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Didn't warn you about
that. Yeah,
you've just heard about the album that we made. It's quite hard to be inspirational.
Something inspirational.
Yeah. Come on, Kyle. Yeah,
right. Okay.
I was up a mountain in Guatemala.
A shaman visited me from afar.
Keep practicing. One day you'll get cue jumping.
Oh, please believe it or not.
Listen, I think you guys have been pretty inspirational anyway. So I really appreciate it, guys. Everyone, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Was that volcano going off?
That was my mind being blown.
See, what I loved about those guys is they're so down to earth. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you wouldn't even necessarily be able to tell they're in a hugely successful band. Mm. You, on the other hand.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Nowhere near as successful. All you ever go on about is your success.
Name one thing I talk about.
Your sweet brand.
It's a successful.
Your time on Strictly.
Successful.
Your book.
What?
Gotcha. You are slightly sickly, but yeah, we put up with it.
Guys, I hope you really enjoyed the episode. Please, please, please go and check out our Patreon page. Very simple. It's in our bio at Private Podcast on our Instagram page. No ads, extra gossip and more stuff for you to listen to. It's really fun. Also, our bonus episodes on a Wednesday, Alex and I sit and we just natter away, no guests, just me and him, talking about all the arguments that I've had with my fiance, pretty much.
It's really good for me. I love coming here on a Monday to record it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's you whinging.
Oh my God, you're the whinger.
I'm not.
I'm so tired. I wish I could drink every day of my life.
Yeah.
That's what I hear you saying.
That's what I manifest.
You just
wake up in the morning and I manifest the ability to drink every day and have no worries.
All right, everybody. Have a great Friday, whatever you're doing. Go and check out the Winter Olympics. Our producer, Sam, keeps talking about it. He is obsessed.
He's got some weird obsession about the Winter Olympics.
Obsession with
he's wearing salopettes and nothing else in it. It's very odd.
Did
he's
you
got
see?
Fake snow on his head. You never guess where I've been. Where, Sam? China. What were you doing there?
Watching the Olympics. It was amazing. All right, everybody, please, hope you enjoyed the episode. We love you, as always, and we'll see you on Wednesday. If not, we'll see you on another Friday. If not, we'll see you soon. Have fun.
Do you know Jamaica have actually, they've got their position in the Winter Olympics. Bobsleigh team have just qualified.
Have they really?
Yep.
Fab. Love that. That's Sam in the background, you just heard him. Okay, Sam. Sam's honestly about to orgasm. He can't. He's like on the verge.
He's got a huge Jamaican flag somehow. He's pulled it out.
All right, everybody, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Yeah, man.